I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today. And don't go anywhere, because we're going to switch subjects from healthy and not eating sugar to climate change, which affects all of us. Or does it? I mean, that's the question I want to ask my guest today, who has written a terrific book called American Exodus, Climate Change and the Coming Flight for Survival. And I want to welcome Giles Slade to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
I'm awake.
You're awake and you're in Canada, so so you're a little bit further north than us, where it's probably a little darker and a little earlier.
A lot further west, yeah.
Yes, I know. So, well, thank you for getting up to join us. You know, my first question on this is, you know, we hear so much, this has become more of a political issue than an environmental issue. Why is that? Why are so many people so divisive on whether climate change is real or not, and why does it become so political?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there are there's so much vested interest in denying climate change. I mean, there's the whole sort of oil economy that depends on climate change not happening, and I think that's what's funded the climate change deniers for the past 20 or 30 years.
But those that say that it's not, my husband is very adamant on this, that there's no such thing, there's no evidence to back this up, there's nothing behind it, yet when I read things that says it clearly is, I read things that say it's imminent, then you read the other side that says it's not. I mean, it's very confusing for the average person that doesn't have a dog in this fight. Of course, yet we all have a dog in this fight, so I should not say that.
Yeah, especially there, you're an hour from New York, Superstorm Sandy, washed in.
It hurt us. It hurt us badly, no question.
And that's a once-in-a-century storm, but, now that those are happening, maybe every 3 to 5 years. Mm. And that's the problem. I mean, so the Earth's atmosphere is heating up, and you're getting more sort of North Atlantic superstorms. And there was another one this year in the Philippines, storm of unprecedented sort of size that when you look at the satellite shots, you can see the curvature of the Earth in comparison to the size of the storm. That's big. So, but there are all kinds of issues. Your apple orchards there in the Warwick Valley are going to be affected. You had a very severe winter this winter. It's all over the United States, all over North America, much worse in Asia. But nonetheless, it's going to affect us profoundly here in North America.
But that severe winter we had was pretty gosh darn cold here in the Northeast. So how does that equate to, the rising of the temperature of the Earth? Because, boy, we sure did not feel that. I mean, how do we put that in perspective?
Well, try and think of the world as a refrigerator, okay? The more extremes you have at either end, So the colder it is in the freezer, the hotter the motor is going to be underneath the refrigerator. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the heat displacement, okay, which is really what the winter is going to be more extreme.
Yeah.
And so you get more and more severe tornadoes. You get, a drought across the Southwest.
Giles, you know what we have? Can you still hear me?
Yeah,
good. You know, we have a caller on the line who I guess wants to ask you a question. Do you want to go ahead, caller, and ask Mr. Slade the question?
Yeah.
Yes. Hi.
Giles, thank you.
One of my questions is this, and this is why I have a big problem with. First, it was global warming. Now it's climate change. When they couldn't prove it was global warming. But my biggest concern is all those emails from East Anglia. You know, is there a part in the book, East Anglia University, where a bunch of climatologists couldn't prove global warming, so they started to collaborate with each other to, A, shut down other people who were writing about, the fact that it wasn't global climate change or it wasn't global warming? How do you address those issues where those people were talking back and forth to one another to tweak the climate change software, things like that?
Yeah, I don't know about that group in East Anglia, but look, the science is pretty clear by now. The IPCC, which is actually, most people think of them as a bunch of, radicals. It's actually a very conservative organization funded by the governments of the world.
You're not familiar with the East Anglia emails?
I beg your pardon?
You're not familiar with the East Anglia emails?
I'm dealing in this book with climate change, okay,
so were they. These are the advocates of it. These are the people who are saying there's climate change now. I don't know how any book could be written today short of these people who were writing. These are the people who are advocating it. These are the people who are getting grants to talk about climate change. How can't we write a whole, you know, a section or address the East Anglia University, because they're doing the work for the UN. This is where these studies are coming from. I don't understand how any book can include that.
Okay.
Do I get a chance to respond?
Yeah, let him respond to that.
Okay, so thanks. So what I try to do in the book is I try to show that climate change is actually something that happens often. It has happened often over the past century. Global warming forces more heat into the world's meteorological system, and that forces more climate change.
Mm.
In the United States during the past century, there have been several periods of climate change, including the Great Depression, but also the Great Migration from Mexico, okay, and the drought that's now happening over the Southwest. And what I try to show in the book is that climate change is inevitable, happens very often, and that the human response to climate change is that people move. Even there in the United States, people move to get away from the effects of extreme weather. So it doesn't really have much to do with a university in England.
Yeah, thank you for calling. I really appreciate that. You know, one of the questions that I have about your book that you talk about is climate migrations, and that they're very important. What does that have to do, and why does that affect us, and what exactly is that?
Well, in places like the Southwest, climate migration has to do with, you know, the decreasing habitability of the region, so that in places like Texas and California, there's no longer enough water to sustain the massive population of either state, and their agriculture is falling apart because of that. And after their agriculture, people will start to out-migrate. And in fact, this has already happened in California. They have negative migration for, I think, the 10th year in a row.
Mm.
People are going elsewhere because, you know, as the environment degrades, the economy collapses. And so one of the most important chapters in the book is a look at the Mexican immigration to the United States since 1982. In 1982, the economy of Mexico collapsed after the petroleum boom collapsed, and what followed was an accelerated environmental collapse of the northern states of Mexico. People over-farmed, there wasn't enough water to achieve subsistence farming, so they started pouring into the United States, and they've been pouring into the United States ever since at an amazing rate. There's now about 25 million Mexicans. Mm.
Does this have something to do with water, though, the droughts that we have in California?
Yes.
I mean, is this because we just don't have enough water, or there's too many people trying to take the resources we have?
It has to do with the surface of the Earth heating up and changing the weather patterns from El Niño to La Niña. So La Niña creates these droughts like it did in the 30s that dry up the southwestern United States. And also it creates hotter wind temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico, which increases, I guess, the tornado activity in the Midwest.
Mm.
And at the same time, you know, the shorter winter seasons and more intense rains because in the northern latitudes the air is more full of water. Bring a lot of riverine flooding to the Midwest. And so floods are another disaster. Floods are another danger.
Isn't this all quite cyclical, though? I mean, if you look back history over the last couple hundred years, don't we always have issues like this? I mean, weather is an issue in different ways, in different cyclical ways.
That's a good way to look at it. It's more like a spiral, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the spiral is tightening and getting quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way to describe the global climate change that's happening now. So the ordinary annual cycle of the seasons is tightening and accelerating and creating much more extreme weather events. I'm sure everybody in the United States
right.
noticed because...
But I wonder if we notice or just that we have 24/7 weather channels that we never did. You know, I mean, you know, there's something very different. You know, when I was a kid, you might check the weather once a day, if that, on the local news. You know, now, you know, we all track the storm where it's coming. It's kind of a hobby more than anything. So maybe we pay so much attention to it. And that's one issue. And the other issue is, people like our caller, you know, that don't believe in this, they can get very heated over it and think
yeah.
that all scientists are wrong. Do scientists are divided on this as well?
I don't think so much anymore. I mean, it's not really a matter of opinion anymore. I mean, there's hard evidence, you know. So the climate is changing now. As to what's doing it, you can argue all day about, you know, anthropogenic global warming, whether or not we heated up the planet, and doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
all my books about is that it is now heating up, and changes are coming, and people are going
to
move.
And what can we do to safeguard this? I mean, I know that you talk about that we have to act now to safeguard our shelter of last resort. What is our last resort?
Well, you know, this is very unpopular with Canadians, but I think your last resort is Canada. And
I'm sure it is popular, but good for us then.
Well, maybe. The thing is, there is a window of about 10, 15 years in which nothing can be done. I mean, the climate change carbon in the atmosphere has now reached 400 parts per million, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's enough to increase the greenhouse effect from, I guess, 360 a few years ago. So,
Giles, we only, unfortunately, have about a minute left. So, you know, you wrote this book for who? You wrote it for everybody, American, Canadian, everybody in the world to...
Yeah, I used to live in, mostly North Americans. I used to live in Los Angeles.
Right.
Now I live
You're
in Vancouver.
Right.
I feel like a North American, you know.
And
I have three kids, and I started to think, what is their life going to be like?
You know, well, if you look down 100 years, and they can easily live 100 years, you know, we have to consider what's going to happen in the future. So this is certainly a great book to read. And, you know, everybody who doesn't agree with it, I think you need to read this and look at the other side of it, because maybe we can all help to make a difference, which is really the bottom line. Giles Slade, thank you so much. The book is American Exodus. Everything is on Shannon's Corner. Thank you for joining us today. Until next time, don't forget to make good choices.